J.C. Corcoran Podcast.
We're riding on the internet, cyberspace set free. Hello, virtual reality.
Interactive appetite, searching for a website, a window to the world, got to get online.
Take a spin, now you're in with the techno set, you're going surfing on the internet.
Hey there, it's us again. This is my brother Peter, mom and dad, and I'm Dasha. Today, we're going to be showing our friends Andrew and Lisa the basics of the internet, and we thought you might want to come along.
It'll be cool.
Now here's a little background. When we installed internet access on our computer, I got the whole family involved.
It's true. Everybody had their own tasks to do.
It was a lot of work, but it was really worth it.
Now that I've gotten on the internet, I'd rather be on my computer than doing just about anything.
It's really cool.
Take a spin, now you're in with the techno set. You're going surfing on the internet.
As Rich told you, we installed the internet on our computer just a short time ago. And I haven't been able to get the kids off it ever since. Having the internet in our home has had a great impact on our lives. Rich keeps up with the stock market and our investments, and I'm able to pay the bills in half the time it used to take me.
On your mark, get set. We're riding on the internet, cyberspace set free. Hello, virtual reality.
Interactive appetite, searching for a website, a window to the world, got to get online.
Take a spin, now you're in with the techno set, you're going surfing on the internet.
Now I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous, don't be rocky, you're a teenage guest disc jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all? Like deja vu all over again.
23rd of August 2021 here at jconline.com. How you doing, kids? Is it cool to love your kids just tremendously and dearly, and also at the same time love the idea that they're back in school? Because that's where I am on all of this. Having 4 or 5 hours during the day back to myself is just great. And then really the rest of your day is spent picking up your kids, getting them something to eat because they're always hungry, rushing to Target for something that they need the next day or want the next day as the case may be, driving them to their math tutor, and then coming back and having about a half an hour to yourself, and then it's off to karate class a couple of nights a week. Oh, and by the way, I'm wondering if it's possible to watch your child take karate class and think that you're also learning the stuff too. I mean, I'm not in the class, but I'm sitting right there watching the whole thing. I can hear everything. I can see everything. And, you know, there have been a couple of times where I said to myself, well, if Carney comes after me again, I got my karate moves. Now I got my karate moves. By the way, every time you're in some sort of an altercation, it doesn't matter what it is, they will come to you during the discovery process where the lawyers will take your deposition. They always ask whether or not you've had any martial arts training. And I haven't, and I still haven't, but you see where I'm going here? So if you're sitting and watching the classes and you're watching every move, and you maybe even go home and practice some of the stuff, I technically have not been involved in martial arts training, and yet I still have the advantage of knowing some of the moves. And then sometimes I say to myself, that's a dangerous thing to be thinking because, you know, I would try some of that stuff. Sometimes some guy came after me and I would try the karate stuff that I thought I learned from watching my 11-year-old daughter's karate classes. And the next thing I would know, I'd be in an ambulance. And on that happy note, we say hi. And we have a little breaking news story here this morning. You know, Bob Costas, the gold standard in broadcasting, as far as I'm concerned, I can't think of anybody else who's ever achieved the notoriety, the respect, the recognition, won every award, and so multi-talented, so good that he is as good just sitting there talking to Paul McCartney or Bob Seger or somebody like that, or Angelina Jolie. He's as good at that as he is calling the World Series game. Well, you know, that's one of those unfortunate things that happens in electronic media, you're sitting there. It was like Drew Johnson. Drew Johnson has been on KC and various radio stations in town. Great guy. And he's been on radio for probably 40 plus years in St. Louis. I worked with him many times, a couple of different radio stations. His brother is Dave Johnson, the guy who for, I don't know, something like 20 years called the Kentucky Derby. And even when Letterman used to get all excited about the Kentucky Derby because he used to, you know, living in southern Indiana, he used to get in the car and drive down to the Kentucky Derby every once in a while when he was younger. And a big Kentucky Derby guy. And so when he was doing that thing, he would have Dave Johnson on the show all the time on the phone. Just, he'd love the term, and down the stretch they come. And Dave, great guy, by the way. Oh, my God. He's been on the show many times. And like I said, he did the Kentucky Derby. He was the voice of the Kentucky Derby. And then one day, NBC says, we're not going to renew our rights to broadcast the Kentucky Derby. It's going to another network. And boom, just like that, it's over and you're out of a job. Now, sometimes, you know, in the hierarchy of professional sports broadcasting, they will do something like they did when Monday Night Football switched networks and they just hire the same announcers. You know, for years you had the broadcast team on ABC Monday Night Football. And then one year, same thing happened. ABC said, we're not renewing our rights to Monday Night Football. It's going to another network. And then they just hired the entire announce team. But in this particular case, the Kentucky Derby, NBC had a young up-and-coming broadcaster that they wanted to promote. And they wanted to sort of put him to the forefront. And so even though Dave Johnson had been the voice of the Kentucky Derby, they had this young guy they wanted to bring in there. I said all that to say all this. I've been watching the way. I've been watching my miss. Bob Costas and TBS reportedly working toward an agreement that would see him host the network's marquee MLB event, that of course being the league championship round leading up to the World Series. TBS wanted to alleviate the pressure on TBS's regular host Ernie Johnson as his duties on the acclaimed Inside the NBA begin in mid-October. So Johnson expected to host the opening rounds of TBS's playoff coverage. Johnson and now Bob Costas apparently will work with Pedro Martinez, Jimmy Rollins, and Curtis Granderson. So Bob, and I didn't see this coming. I didn't hear any rumors about this. And all of the sports insiders, we've talked about this a couple of times, about how every radio and TV station, newspaper, magazine, whatever the case may be, they always say, well, let's go to our Rams insider. Let's go to our Cardinals insider. Let's go to our Blues insider, with the attempt on their part to make you believe that they have one guy who's in all those secret meetings that the owner of the team has and therefore knows everything about the inner workings of whatever franchise they happen to be talking about, which of course is nonsense. That's like a radio station or a newspaper or a car dealership or a pizza place just saying, we're number one. Do you ever wonder about that when you're listening to the radio or watching TV, especially because they all do it on TV? There's, you know, five stations doing news in St. Louis and they all claim to be number one. And how can that be happening? Here's how. When the ratings are tanking, which is all the time, but when they're doing the ratings and computing all of this stuff, you have what's known as the industry standard, meaning that if somebody says, we are number one at 6 o'clock, that means that the 6 o'clock news Monday through Friday, because that is the industry standard, that you finish number one Monday through Friday at 6 o'clock doing the news. Well, then another television station will come along and say, no, we're number one. And then at the very bottom of the screen in really, really small print, they'll say, we're number one 18 to 49 or number one 18 to 34. So are they lying? No. Are they misleading you? Absolutely. And you can understand what they're doing. Nobody wants to not be number one, so they all say it. But in doing so, they negate any impact that claiming to be number one has because everybody's saying it. Watching Channel 4, we're number one. Go over to Channel 5, we're number one. Go over to Fox 2, we're number one. Channel 11 doesn't bother trying to convince you they're number one because you wouldn't believe it anyhow. So Adam Wainwright, when he sweats, what comes out of him is the water from the fountain of youth, apparently. And even though the Cardinals did have a nice win yesterday on the shoulders of Mr. Wainwright himself. It's hard to take this team seriously as you're in a pennant chase. Well, in this case, you're in a wild card chase, 4.5 games back, I believe, this morning. 4.5 games back, you could make that up. You could go on a hot streak, and you could still grab that wild card spot. But every night, you look at the lineup, and there's Matt Carpenter usually hitting cleanup. And he's hitting about 100 and some change. And you're like, well, if you guys aren't serious, why should I be? You know, the ballpark's only getting like 22, 23, 24,000 out there to the games. Place looks half empty because it is. Because the Cardinal fans, except for a small number of them, don't believe that this is possible, and they've already given up on the season. You go on a hot streak, go on a road or something like that, come back from a 10-day road trip, and suddenly you're a half game out of the final wild card spot. Everybody will be back because it'll be exciting, but right now it just doesn't seem. Also, I don't think most fans understand. Cardinals are, what are we, like 10, 12 games out of first place? We're not going after first place. We're going after the final wild card spot, and that definitely is attainable, but not when you're putting Matt Carpenter in the cleanup spot every night. Jesus! A lot of people have already shifted over to the idea of football, and you've got, actually, you got Monday Night Football tonight. Who's playing tonight? ESPN, 7 o'clock. New Orleans hosting Jacksonville. Go to bed early tonight. And you know, if you go to a Blues preseason game or you go down to Jupiter, Florida, go see the Cardinals play preseason stuff, the fact that it is not a real game in that it doesn't count for anything, and you get past the fourth or fifth inning and there's guys out there with, you know, number 77 because they're not going to make the roster. The franchise is trying to get a look at them in, you know, a legitimate game experience type situation. And let's have a look at this guy, up and coming shortstop. And you're like, well, hold on, wait a minute. We got a shortstop. It's like, yeah, but, you know, DeYoung hasn't exactly been ripping it up this year. This has been very much an off year for him. It's like, maybe we should look at a shortstop. Or, you know, obviously, when you always hear that, you know, so-and-so was traded for cash and a player to be named later. Well, there's number 77 right there. That might be the guy. But you go to these, you know, preseason exhibition games, and the price of the ticket is reflected in the fact that it's not a real game. It doesn't count for anything. But not in the National Football League. No, no, no. Even though when you get to the halfway point of the second quarter, it's like, who are these guys? I don't recognize any of these names. You know why? Because all these guys are going to go back to their jobs as bouncers and bartenders in about 2 weeks when the teams all have to trim their rosters and, you know, go into the season with their real players. And all these other guys go home. And yet, you're still paying a ticket price that is the equivalent to a regular season game. You could have the Bears and the Packers, and the price of the ticket is the same as this stinker tonight with New Orleans hosting Jacksonville. The degree of greed on the part of the NFL is just hard to even comprehend sometimes. Going to be another hot week. 97 tomorrow, 98 Wednesday, 97 Thursday, 95, 95, 93. And not until a week from today does the temperature come down a little bit. Sure is a good thing. We sent the kids all back to school, huh? So, you know, you have these older schools where the air conditioning really is nothing to speak of. And that's what you want to do. You have a 7-year-old walking home from school, walking back from the bus stop, when they're telling everybody to stay inside because the heat index makes it feel like it's 115. It's so hot out, kids can't even have gym class outside because it's too damn hot. They'll start dropping like flies. I don't know where this idea came from or who started it or how it ever got going, of the idea that, we, you know, used to be you get out around Memorial Day, you'd go back to school the day after Labor Day. Seemed like everything worked just fine, and you didn't have kids in school for almost a month when the temperatures are approaching 100 degrees. And by the way, if you don't have kids, talk to somebody who does. They'll tell you that like the final 2 weeks of almost any school you could pick out, they're not even teaching anything. They're watching DVDs, and they're going on field trips, and it's almost like they're just killing time because the school year ends, let's just say, you know, like June 10th. And so for like the whole last 2 weeks of the school year, they're not even doing anything. schools have to pay for all that air conditioning and the places where the air conditioning does work? But that's where I want to be when it feels like 115 degrees outside on a school bus. I don't get it. I just don't get it. And now this.
The A-List Interview with JC and the Morning Show Graham.
Jackson Browne on the Laurel Canyon days of the late 60s.
Was it nuts? Was it fun? Was it both?
I look at it like everybody that's ever had any success must have had this period when they went from scuffling from 1 month they were trying to get somebody to make a record with them and getting some success. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. In those days, we all generally wound up in the same bar later that night and then over at one of our houses. Now, I think it's probably pretty much the same as anybody's first days.
I don't know if you saw this or not, but James Taylor is going out on a nationwide tour. And I've seen James Taylor perform a couple of different times. And I think I've seen him in some other venues too. But it got my attention because it's like, oh, wait a minute. Look at his opening act, Jackson Browne. Jackson Browne and James Taylor together? I am so there. And it's been hard continuing to like Jackson Browne. You know, a lot of his early stuff, and even through the 80s, I was always a huge, huge Jackson Browne fan, went to all the concerts, would sit there, you know, with the headphones on, really, really listening. You know, there's a couple of different ways to listen to music. Obviously, sometimes it's just to kill time, something in the background, maybe you're in the car, you don't even realize what you're listening to, maybe you hear a good song or something like that, you turn it up a little bit. But then there's other ways to listen to music too, depending on who it is. But Jackson Browne definitely, for me, was one of those guys where you'd put the headphones on and close the door and really, really pay attention to what was being said, what was being sung, and also the music was really, really pleasant to the ear. I'm speaking the past tense because I think it's pretty clear to everybody that Jackson Browne has a little bit of a temper issue. And I ran into that, by the way, on a couple of occasions. They flew me to Chicago once to interview Jackson Browne, and we went right to the concert venue, and it was an outdoor place, sort of like, you know, what we have in Maryland Heights, but in the Chicago suburbs. And I got there at, like, I don't know, 10 o'clock in the morning, and I waited, and I waited, and I waited. Finally, at 3 o'clock, 5 hours later, and by the way, he knew I was there because we made eye contact several times. He'd go up and down the hallways of the concert venue there, you know, back where the dressing rooms are. And I mean, I'm just sitting there in an empty dressing room with my camera guy, and we're just sitting there. And he would go up and down the hallway every couple of minutes, and he would look right at me sitting there with a giant tripod and a giant television camera. And it wasn't like those baby things they have now where the TV stations are using video equipment that's about the size of something you'd pick up at Best Buy to videotape your kid's graduation. That's how far the technology has come in the last, you know, 20 or 30 years, obviously. And then at 3 o'clock, everything was a big rush. Now, eventually, I got a very, very good interview out of him, and you heard a clip from it there just a moment ago, but man, oh man, it was like pulling molars with this guy. And he, very much like Linda Ronstadt and a couple other people, names I could throw in, but those are the two that really jump out. You really got to be careful what you say to these two people. You have to be so careful. Linda Ronstadt is the kind of person who will argue with you while you're agreeing with her. It's so counterintuitive to everything. And yeah, got a great interview out of him. Man, it's like, you know, walking on eggshells. And I ended up catching the last flight out of Chicago back to St. Louis. So what should have taken an hour or two took 10 hours. 10 hours. That was the late 80s, and that's when I started thinking to myself, do I really want to continue to do this? This is getting to be way too much trouble. But at least he didn't punch me like he did to his girlfriend at the time, Daryl Hannah, who is with Neil Young now, I think so. Yeah, she's with Neil Young right now. I think that's another one I don't get. Gene Simmons from Kiss took a shot at David Lee Roth, saying he's nothing like he used to be. David Lee Roth responded by posting a photo of a little kid giving the finger 18 times. Reverend Jesse Jackson and his wife hospitalized with COVID. He's 79, wife is 77. And then you've got Phil Valentine, a big talk show host on the radio in Nashville and a staunch anti-vaxxer, 61 years old, gets the COVID and he out. I don't know how many more stories the anti-vaxxers have to hear like this before they get the idea. Then, two and two is five. Donald Trump got some boos at his own rally over the weekend telling people to get vaccinated. Is that going to be funny if his base ever turns on him? All right, late night tonight, Kelly Clarkson, I'm with Jimmy Fallon. Jimmy Kimmel's got Snoop Dogg, Nelly. Oh, that's right. Stephen A. Smith is filling in tonight because Kimmel's still off for the rest of the summer. I don't know why Colbert is off this week. You know, he's off for 2 weeks, came back to work for a week, and is off for a whole nother week. James Corden's got Jason Momoa and Lord Seth Meyers as Sean Penn. Eric Stone Street from Kansas City and Modern Family, engaged to a woman. By the way, remember, he's not gay in real life. William Peterson, hospitalized after falling ill on the set of CSI Las Vegas. They think it was just exhaustion. Legendary groupie Connie Hamsey died over the weekend. Sweet, sweet Connie. Doing her act. She was 66 years old. And a fan at Dead and Company, the show at Citi Field in New York, died after he tried to do a backflip and fell off a balcony. Birthdays today, Scott Kahn, 45, Jay Moore, Bob Sugar from Jerry Maguire, 51, Shelley Long, 72, Rick Springfield, 72, Rudy Rudiger, as in the movie Rudy, 73. I'm not trying to ruin your enjoyment of the movie Rudy, but you have to understand that about 98% of that story was made up. You know, Joe Montana was the quarterback of Rudy's Notre Dame team. He's like, I was there. The whole movie is bullshit. Richard Sanders, that would be Les Nessman, 81. Barbara Eden, still kicking it at 90. And this would have been another birthday for Keith Moon, but we lost him in 1978. 59 years ago today, 1962, John Lennon married a Cynthia Powell. Secret ceremony in Liverpool. She was already pregnant with Julian. They divorced in 1968. It was a big hit song. I like listening to it, but if you pay attention to it for even 30 seconds, you realize how absolutely absurd Brandy, You're a Fine Girl, Looking Glass, number one on the pop chart on this date 49 years ago today, 1972. But think about it. You got a bunch of sailors who have been out at sea for 6 months. They're on terra firma for the first time. They go charging into the bars, the seaside pubs, and there's Brandy, a fine girl, the first woman they've seen in half a year. She's serving them whiskey and wine and shaking her ass all over the bar, and all these guys want to say to her is, Brandy, you know, you're a fine girl. You're going to make a good wife someday. I am so sure. My brain isn't big enough to imagine what I would say to the first girl I saw if I hadn't seen a woman in 6 months. This story is still confusing a lot of people. They just don't get it, and I can understand why. 1989 on this day, 32 years ago, Paula Poroskova marries Rick Ocasek of the Cars. They split up in 2017. He cut her completely out of the will, and I saw a thing on Facebook the other day. She's got no money. She's broke. She's, you know, asking people for money to survive. Tiger Woods and Elin Nordegren divorced on this date in 2010. What happened in that marriage? Why did that marriage go bad? And it was 21 years ago today, the year was 2000, that this guy got his star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. We're talking Kenny Loggins, who's been on the show a couple of times. You, man, and I were out in California once covering the Cardinals and the Giants in postseason play, and Kenny Loggins happened to be appearing in San Francisco that very night. And we called up his agent, and he's like, hey, come on. He just came by. You know, we would set up our broadcast table in the lobby of the hotel where the Cardinals were staying, and sometimes you'd be able to grab a guy, you know, one of the members of the team, one of the wives, you know, managers, coaches, whatever. We're just trying to sort of bring the essence of what it's like to be on the road with the Cardinals and everything like that. But we also did other stuff, too. And if somebody says, hey, Kenny Loggins will come by and sit at your table, we're like, absolutely, bring him by. So we did that, too. A couple of years ago, we talked to Kenny again, and he's our JC Celebrity A-List Interview of the Day. Hi, Kenny. It's JC. And how are you doing, man?
I'm doing good.
All right. I got a bunch of questions. A lot of stuff I want to talk to you about. Let's start here, though. You know, in the 70s and 80s, you had three huge hits with songs used in movies. I'm All Right for Caddyshack, Danger Zone, Top Gun, and Footloose, movie of the same name. That was a real phenomenon. How did it all work, though? Were those songs written for the movie? Were the songs designed to be played on radio to try to get people to see the movie? How did all that work?
Well, it wasn't quite as thought out as that. Back then, you just wanted a song to go with the movie, and if you, you know, got lucky, then you would make a video, and MTV would help a lot. But each one was slightly different. I'm All Right, I had a friendship with John Peters from when he and Barbara Streisand were making Star Is Born. They cut one of my songs. And then from that friendship, when he went solo and created his production company that made Caddyshack, he called me, and I saw a rough cut. They didn't have an ending on it, and they didn't have the gopher in it. But I loved the movie, and, you know, Bill Murray just stole it for me. And so I wanted to be a part of that. And then from that, one of my best friends, Dean Pitchford, had written a screenplay and wanted me to read his screenplay and maybe write some songs for that with him. So as a favor to Dean, I wrote a couple songs with him called Footloose and I'm Free. And then that movie, suddenly, his screenplay became the biggest movie of the summer and a huge favor for me. And then I was in the studio cutting a song that I'd written for Top Gun called Playing with the Boys. And I got a call from Giorgio Moroder, who said, you know, the band that was going to sing Danger Zone was Toto, and I guess the lawyer screwed it up and they had to drop out. And so he needed a singer, and he said, you know, you're in the studio. Can you come over tomorrow and sing? I need to cut this yesterday. Basically, I said, is it up-tempo? He said, yeah. I said, I'm there.
Those are amazing stories. I never would have guessed that that would be the backstory on that stuff.
Yeah. So much of a career is blind luck. You just happen to be in the right place at the right time.
At the right time. Exactly. Well, Kenny, there have been volumes written about the nasty behavior of performers in the music business, and we all know the stories. Now we have these half-naked women doing stuff on stage that we wish our wives and our girlfriends would do once in a while in the privacy of our own homes, if you know what I mean. I bring all this up because back around 1972, you and Jim Messina's album cover was a shot of the two of you, and clearly you guys were stoned out of your mind, and everybody loved it because on one hand it was shocking, but it also was a little bit on the subtle side. All at the same time. Can you talk a little bit about how you thought about the best ways to market yourself as a musician and how that played into your success?
Well, you know, we weren't that savvy to marketing back then, the way they are now. I mean, I get a sense when I watch Miley Cyrus that the whole thing was incredibly manipulated, and it has actually worked. It's reinvented her career. It just keeps opening the door to more and more, you know, outrageous stuff, which we seem to eat up as a public. Back in those days, we didn't think that much about it. I mean, the fact that we were sitting around playing cards was what we were doing, you know. But we were hanging out waiting for the photo session to start, and they lit it all around us. And so that became the album cover. You know, I wanted to recreate it when we did our reunion tour in 09, to recreate that album cover and then get Patron to sponsor the tour, and the bottles on the table would be Patron. Unfortunately, that didn't work out, but it would have been fun to do.
Great idea, though. All right, let's talk a little bit about the book and the CD that goes with it, the book and the CD. You know, all guys like to believe they're really good dads. What sort of dad were you, especially when your kids were really little and you had things like children's books like this?
Well, you have to know that I have five kids.
Right.
I cover a couple of decades of parenting. You know, when I was young, I was not that great a dad in that I toured too much. You know, my personal success was on the top of my list. I became a better dad as I got older. I still tour more than I wish I'd had. But at the same time, you have to look at the other side, which is, you know, if you're passionate about what you do, you're teaching your kids about how to be passionate at what they do, and that I can still come home and be 100% dad and love them and be a part of their lives when I'm around, especially. I'm teaching them that it's okay to follow your passion. It's actually necessary, and that sometimes it takes you physically away, but it doesn't ever take me emotionally away.
Now, people might be saying, well, my gosh, he's doing Frosty the Snowman. What's up with that? But you actually have a little bit of a history. You don't have to go that far back to remember when you did House at Pooh Corner.
That's right. House at Pooh Corner right at the very beginning, and then I reinvented it 20 years ago. I reinvented it with a new third verse, and that launched me into a series of children's CDs that I did for Sony Wonder. What they're called children's CDs. I always thought they were parent CDs disguised as children's CDs. But Return to Pooh Corner is, you know, 2 million strong, so, you know, it's found an audience. I just feel real good about it. I know I feel comfortable in that genre.
What are you going to be doing this Christmas? You have big plans?
Well, you know, I like to be home. I haven't toured except one time I did a Christmas tour of about 12 dates, but I prefer being home. I still have a kid in the nest. My daughter, Hannah, is 16. The next one up is 20, so he's sort of in and out. But all the kids live in Santa Barbara with me, and I love having the holidays with them.
You have a great holiday season. Kenny Loggins, thanks for spending a little time with us.
Thank you.
Nice guy. Really enjoyed that. And that's it for today. The J.C. Corcoran Podcast here at jcontheline.com is in the can for the 23rd of August, 2021. Continue to spread the word if you can that we're here and absolutely free every weekday morning. We post at 7 a.m. Enjoy your day. Stay cool. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.